Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the writer Ziggy Edwards. Ziggy Edwards grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and earned a Bachelor in Arts in Fiction Writing from the University of Pittsburgh. Her poems and short stories have appeared in magazines including Barbaric Yop, Confluence, Edge, Main Street Rag, and the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Hi, Ziggy. How you doing?
Hello. Pretty good. Good to be here.
Good to have you. You're going to start with poems from your book, Hope's White Shoes.
Right? Indeed. And I think I'll just start off with the title poem. Hope's White Shoes. Before we moved away, there was Hope's birthday sleepover. I sat at a table of laughing 10-year-old ghosts. Out the window, snow wandered towards asphalt, and the sidewalk heaved up by trees. Snow, with the sun still beating, yellow-tinted staccato spun serene by grazing clouds, bald branches. Next morning, I walked around the corner to meet the hulking U-Haul as it solemnly ate our couch. Behind our front porch snapshot and the four-hour drive, Hope's house stands still while people stream in and out, blur past the windows, crowd hallways and steps, churn into something that's everywhere and already gone. When I walk back, I leave time for that waiting place on Northumberland Street. The angular furniture, the landscape painting over the piano, Hope's white shoes aligned on the doormat. I sit in dappled underwater shadows, hours after the last of us sacked out in our sleeping bags. I think I remember hearing them breathe. Even asleep, they move too fast to see. Their hyperdrive heartbeats, their hummingbird eyelids, their incalculable dreams. My old dolls. Mom stacked them, pyre of flesh crayon legs, foot to head in air conditioner boxes I find in the hallway closet after she's dead. I pace between TV and window, eating her stale oyster crackers, waiting for garbage pickup. On cardboard flaps jigsawed shut, the pelting rain sounds like muttering heartbeat. They're birthed, I know somehow, in a waste of ink trees and barnacle fungus. Even sleeping on the couch, my trail starts here. I call airlines, move up the day to fly out. Closer, naked, they track soaked leaves, mud-filled booties ditched in the weeds. Hinged eyes blinking, they are sleepy and ravenously hungry. And if that wasn't nightmarish enough for you, I should say about that poem, that was actually based on a painting done by Pat Barefoot, the artist Pat Barefoot. The next one I'll read is Trigger Zen. I cocked my finger at the moon and three pointed back. Three itchy fingers tipped with silver crescents linked at the knuckle. Howling would give us away. I parted the pews of my teeth, aimed at the roof of my mouth. They had grown restless under cloistered palate, firmament invisible in silence. Even the crooked and hollow rejoiced in skim light my finger let in from the clay pigeon moon. And since I'm here on the radio, I'll take the opportunity to read this one. When I'm feeling really brave, I read this one. But I usually don't explain it because I feel like that would be taking it away. But since I'm just sitting here, I'll go ahead and explain it. I kind of want to duck every time I read this poem because I don't want people to think that this is how I really feel. And I think that some people may feel like I have a problem sometimes when I stand up in front of them and read this poem. So I actually try not to explain it because I don't want to get too self-conscious about it. But since I'm here, this disembodied voice, I feel like I can do that. That's okay. So I'll go ahead and read it, The Fitting Room. That's me, feeble in TJ Maxx, trying on rows of tapered acid-washed jeans I may or may not need. She won't eat, my mother whispers to my sister outside. What do they know? Hunger makes your ears raw open wires, bones humming icicles of poise. Real hunger, that's not a feeling most Americans can claim. I examine my hips in the mirror. I'll never wear sausage-squeezing stretch pants like Mom and Tina. Fat comes in one size, white trash. I'd rather see black spots, tiny exploding dancers, graceful behind my eyes.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Ziggy Edwards, and she's reading from her new chapbook entitled Hope's White Shoes. And I want to be sure to mention that if you want a copy of this chapbook, you can get it by emailing the following address. And here's the address, with a pen, all one word, at yahoo.com. It's also available at the University of Pittsburgh bookstore. So let's talk about the last poem, since you were qualifying it. And, and I think most people know, you know, the idea of persona in a poem. Sometimes it's only called the speaker in a poem who's speaking, but it seems like you were telling us that went further, and that was a very different persona talking. Can you talk about why you're worried about that?
Well, right. That is a little bit of a harder poem. I do that a lot. But with this one, in some ways, it's a lot closer to my demographic than some of the other speakers I write from. So,
what do you mean your demographic?
Well, I think that this speaker is a lot closer to the person that you would see if I were standing in front of you, probably. So it's a little easier to get confused than if I'm writing in a voice of a 9-year-old boy or something, where you would certainly know that the speaker is not me. Mm-hmm. So it might get a little, in this one, it might get a little more tangled. And also it is a bit, I did have a, you know, sort of a fascination with that subject. You know, but I haven't struggled with those issues. So in a way I feel a little bit, you know, sometimes I feel a little bit iffy about taking possession of that mm-hmm. subject, as if, you know, I do have things to say about it, but it's not coming from a place of direct experience. So,
but a writer can write about anything, yeah. Right? And doesn't need to explain to anyone about those things, right?
Absolutely. Which is why I make it a point not to explain when I actually read it. When I do a reading, I always just go right into it and don't say a word. Mm-hmm. And I feel pretty ballsy when I do that, mm-hmm. but. I don't know. Sometimes it doesn't seem like such a bad thing to talk about, as far as, you know, the whole craft of it, the way we do things and put things together.
Well, I think you're bringing up an important issue. I mean, I don't know any writer who hasn't been worried about reading a particular poem for one reason or another, but that's part of our job as writers to deal with that, and the listener's job to deal with it too, I think.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
I've heard, you know, a few writers say that if they're writing something, if it doesn't make them feel uncomfortable and it doesn't, you know, make them worried or get some kind of emotional reaction from them as they're writing it, then they feel like it's not worth doing. They want, you know, that's the whole point, is to go to those places and be messy.
Right, right. I want to ask you about where you get your poems. You mentioned after reading the one poem that you wrote it from a painting by Pat Barefoot. So I'd like to know, you know, is that a thing that you do often, is write from paintings, or how does that work, writing from a painting?
Well, that was just sort of a one-time event. Not that just one poem, but I actually did 3 or 4 from several of her paintings, just for one event, and I actually would really like to do more of that. That's sort of a more structured thing. It almost felt like an assignment, like a prompt, and I really got into that. And I guess I could take it upon myself to write that way more often, go out and find my own paintings to write about. But for some reason, I don't. I don't naturally approach it that way. I'll do it a few different ways. Sometimes it'll just all be there, all almost completely the way it is, and I don't have to do anything to it after I write the first pass. I write from my dreams a lot, and those are usually the ones that have to be revised over and over and over again, because I write them down in prose first, and they just don't sound good as poems at first. And then sometimes I'll do a free write.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes I'll just have an idea that's been kicking around in there for a long time, and that takes a while to get out, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to talk more about all of that, but right now I'd like to hear some more poems.
Okay.
If you don't mind.
Okay, the next one I'm going to read, I guess I'll talk a little bit about this one, too. Because it's something I've been thinking about a lot. I've been thinking about it for a while. This is not a new poem, but I guess this poem was a little bit, it took me a few tries to get it right. It's sort of a political poem. It's about George W. Bush, but sometimes when I'm all hating on him, I feel kind of bad because, after all, he is a human being, and I see him a lot of the time as part of this, you know, this conspiracy they that I think about a lot. And I know that simplifies things, but I really do believe that there are people out there who are, you know, in a class war, who are kind of running things into the ground right now. But, you know, we're all human beings. I think one of the things about George Bush, one of the few things I could find that really genuinely made me feel sympathy for him, is that he, when he was 7 years old, he had a younger sister who died of leukemia when she was three. And that had to have, you know, informed a lot of things in his life, you know, whatever he's doing now. So this poem takes that. And also the fact that he was abducted by aliens. That really happened. George wins the human race. He squints, never blinks, at press corps flash bulbs. The president's first tractor beam when he was seven, running beside the woods. Dust danced marionette in headlights, none of them his father's olds. Carrying one end of a record player, he sees the green car pull in. In the back seat, sunset slice of her hair. He sets it down, runs to the teacher. My mom, dad, and sister are here. He's standing in the open door. We're sorry, son, she's passed on. Watching his eyes in the rearview mirror. Passed what? She got to go on an airplane. She was going to get well. Cold white hall with no doorknobs. One touched his forehead like mom, feeling for fever. With one finger. It felt pleased and sad. No, that couldn't be the last time he saw her. In college, the president crashed a phone pole, walked the yellow line, stopping to puke. Those funny paramedics. Your father knows you are here. They planted a bomb in his chest. He rests one hand on the podium. The president's leg hair beneath his blue suit, contrail scar beneath his red tie. Dina. It was a perfectly good doll I burned, the one we fought over as children. The blonde passed between clans of cloth cousins with treaties, custody agreements, whip-stitch sprung, with small rips between its arms and chest. The truth is my sister got that doll for Christmas, but I was bigger, and it looked the most like me, the imperialist. It made a convincing daughter. I'll go back to the book for a little bit. I'll read this one just because it's fun and I always like reading it. The Devil You Know. When Mrs. Galooly is tired of the limited vocabulary of preschool children, she drives to the public pool, where Satan is usually cooling off in the deep end. He treats her to nachos and hot dogs. He won't get cramps if he goes back in. She finds his ruminations on the president, the global economy, consumerism, quite uplifting. He rubs her pearl earring under his rough, sunburned thumb, steals her a lawn chair, then spreads a warm black towel between its arms to save her back and thighs from welts. They laugh together when the handsome, evenly tanned lifeguard slips on one of the wet wooden rungs on the way up to his throne, and he swears at his scraped hand. Yet she's never invited the devil to her third-floor apartment across from the park. She finds that unwise since he's Satan, which he's admitted from the very beginning. This hemisphere. The black and white TV, rabbit ears wrapped in tin foil, showed Nova in the kitchen. That's how I learned death. After his interview, the mustachioed surgeon sawed a woman's head in half. Split along Sharpie marker lines drawn on her scalp, he cracked the skull to reveal her brain's bright watermelon guts. Just like roadkill, only fresh. Someday, metal inserts won't keep the juice in that brain from trickling away. My hunchbacked grandmother paid no attention. She was making chocolate white icing cake with plenty of lard. That night, my mom decided to stay on the farm another 2 days after Christmas. 10 dry acres where I jumped over a snake, fed skinny cats under the empty shack next door, drew my first map on school graph paper of the surrounding woods. I'll do this one because you like it, so I'll do it as a treat or something. Wing the bird down. 1. Swim trunk boys sing "Wing the Bird Down," hurling curly fries to break open space. They shout reedy deep from anemone lungs, deep beneath dimpled conches of ribs, arms wheeling rain dance like airborne gulls. Wing the bird down, I'm glass booth death, but your lips move. 2. You sit on an orange crate smoking to the butts, reading birthday cards, ashing through fire escape grid, skimming the top of a landlocked town. No whispered pigeon lullaby, wing the bird down. You trace a signature, mold billowing signals, with Oyster Ridge mouth, words typed capital on the two of clubs, ready ahead of your oil-stamped coin, the day you ran home to hug mother.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Ziggy Edwards, reading from her new book entitled Hope's White Shoes. I want to say one more time that if you want to get a copy of Hope's White Shoes, you can email the following address with a pen, it's all one word, with a pen at yahoo.com. It's also available at the University of Pittsburgh bookstore. Yeah, I do like that last poem. The sound in there is really nice, nice compression. But I want to get back to, I'm really interested in this writing from painting stuff. Do you think you could get closer to it and talk about how you get a poem from a painting, you know, in terms of this line and these words or this image, et cetera? How did you do that?
Well, what I did was, and again, this is something that I would, you know, like to try again. It's been a while since I did it. I sat down in front of the paintings and just jotted down my first impressions. And sometimes lines, when you're in that frame of mind, sometimes the lines just come right away. But at that point, they were still sort of disjointed. It was just about the images directly. And then later, I tried not to do too much work, because if you put too much and try to make it make too much sense, then it dampens things down a little bit. But then I sort of built a story around what I had.
Okay, so you're talking about literal impressions at first, jotting down just really what you see literally, and then finding a story from there.
Yeah.
Because I was going to also ask you about story, because that seems really important in your poems, that there's a narrative, even in the last poem, I imagine, that you read, even though it's a collection of images. I always feel a movement of some kind of story there. Is that important to you as a writer? Is that a prime way that you get to the poem?
It's very important to me, I'd say. I originally started off writing fiction, which at this point in my life, for some reason, feels kind of intimidating to me, so I'm working on that. But poetry actually started off, my involvement in it started off being sort of a way to try to get back into writing. And I found that I didn't want to leave once I was there. I enjoyed it so much. So I feel like that's where, I know poems can move in different ways, but I feel like that's where I get my movement from. I feel like if it doesn't go anywhere, I almost feel like there's no point. There are plenty of poems I have, you know, locked away somewhere that just have a bunch of nice images in them, but nothing really happens, and they don't go anywhere. So if it doesn't go somewhere, it doesn't necessarily have to be a literal story, but I guess that is one of the main ways I use to get a poem to move somewhere, is to try to have some story, even if I'm only thinking of it and it doesn't necessarily come out. Because sometimes people, you know, when I talk to them in a workshop or something about what I actually meant to do with that poem, they'll say, I didn't get that at all.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense, though. It makes a lot of sense to me. What about dreams? You talked about writing from your dreams and how sometimes those poems needed a lot more revision. Can you talk about what comes out of the dreams in terms of fragments or whatever, and why it needs more writing?
Well, I think it has to do with my method of recording them. I dream a lot. I've found that the more you write down your dreams, the more often you remember them. So it ends up being that very often I'll have a string of days where I'll remember something every day. And I'm a little bit obsessive, and I'm not really sure why I do it, but I feel like it's important. A lot of cultures do talk about what happens in their sleep a lot, and you do spend a third of your life there. But somehow I didn't really think about any of that stuff when I started doing this, but I will write it down every day if I remember something. And that comes out in prose. I always do it in prose. So I think that's probably why it takes more work, because there's a lot of good stuff in there, but it starts off as prose. And if you already have something there and you have to renovate it and refurbish it into a poem, sometimes I'll just take what I wrote and chop it up into verse, and it
don't say that.
Yeah.
It's please don't.
And sometimes, well, it doesn't,
no,
you
just
know.
Thinking of my students, like I always tell them the last way you want to think about poetry is prose chopped up into lines. But
well,
but
that's how
ahead.
It starts off. And that's why it needs so much work, is because to get from there to an actual poem, you know, that's, you know, I guess it's the wrong way to do it.
No, I'm not saying that. But
so those take a lot of work.
Yeah.
And since there are so many of them, usually I won't even bother with it unless there's a really compelling image in it or there's something that's symbolically significant to me. Because believe it or not, a lot of them aren't. They're just complete nonsense.
Okay.
But like, I had one about Mr. Rogers putting on makeup the other night, and I want to do something with that. I just don't know where to go
okay.
from there.
All right. How about more poems?
Okay. Let's see. Where should I go from here? I'll do another one from a painting. This is one from another of Pat Barefoot's paintings called Treasure Chest Cavity. Pirates' booty, sand through goblets and eye sockets, rubies and tooth cages, air pockets beneath a beach, antler shadowed with parapets. Sacred lair of laid in there, cloaked by skirts but real in legend. Green Geiger jewel glowing ringlets everyone wants to get. Victory, mutiny, no excuse needed to storm Eden. And who are the gatekeepers to keep them away? Even you can see it is beautiful, worth every cannonball hole in the wall, ivory nest of your treasure chest cavity, sifted smooth and empty. Pearls bead your femur, brooches you wear in your bones, a clavicle choker. And since we're on that subject, I'll just do another one from another painting by Pat Barefoot, Winnowing. The scan showed bone, her eyes closed, a pebble that hurt, suspended in pink sponge. Machines transcribed her, "I am alive," in spike language. She felt where her eyelashes rested in hollows. "Take my breasts, my eggs, my hair. Give me another 2 years." Actually, something I just noticed with those two poems is interesting is they're both from paintings, but one is a lot more, I got more of a story out of it, and the other one is much more based on the images I got from it. So it's always something different, which is, I guess, one of the great things about writing poetry is every experience is a new one when you're writing, no matter how long you've been doing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I noticed about those two is that they're a little further away than your poems usually feel. You know, they're not as immediate as some of the details of your stories in poems.
That would make sense, because I was kind of looking at it from across the room.
Okay.
So I'll go to one that's not from that. Then we'll do something different. I'll do this one. I'll do water fossils. Snowflakes like fat waving sea monkeys spiral onto ghost cars through the caved-in ceiling of a dark planetarium where Zeiss lies in wait for gentle alien explorers, or its mother, we legions who craned our necks, amazed stargazers who later showed the cosmos what rises behind hills and circles the globe, plumes wider than any mushroom. Each winter I almost see it, bleak field trip we imagined, in water fossils stuck to this metal bridge girder, where we practiced throwing pebbles like planets, and you worried, who are we to take the grass with us and leave the roaches? As if you'd be here to see, and we'd stand over this river, watch downtown instantly hollow out, hands in each other's pockets. No way of foreseeing uncontrolled proliferation of your cells. Another budding crisis, nuclear warfare couldn't shrink. How is it you could take nothing with you, yet leave so little behind? 10 years ago already, or only, and it still isn't here. Though you projected to, they'd have built a mall in Buell by now.
It's the poetry of Ziggy Edwards, reading from her book, Hope's White Shoes. Thanks a lot for coming.
Thank you for having me.
I want to mention also that Ziggy's reading on June 16th with Arlene Wiener at the Choice in the Choice Cut series at the Slaughterhouse Gallery. You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Joseph Wilk and Lauren Wolf. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody here on Independent Public Radio, 91.3 WYEP. She had a smile that swerved. She had a smile that curved. She had a smile that all wrong.